Welcome everyone to the Damage Report. I'm John Adarula. Today is a big old Friday show where, as always, assuming you're watching the full show, we're gonna be throwing away our garbage people of the week. And I've got a petty little one for you that I can't wait to talk about. Along the way, I'll be joined by, as always, the host of the Happy Half Hour, Brett Ehrlich.
Hi, I'm a participant in today's show, adjusting his volume. Nice to see you, John. What's going on with you?
Nothing's. I'm just living my life, you know, just trying. How are you doing? How is
life? I'm doing great. We had a really fun Happy Half Hour this week, and we're gonna have a really fun Game Busters this evening at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern.
I've heard tell that you guys are gonna be playing Turbo Rocket Golf Race, something like that.
I don't remember. Jordan was like texting us game ideas last night, and I said sure. And one of the main motivators behind that is to get him to stop.
Is he gonna stop? Yeah, that does sound fun. Maybe a little bit of Multiversus. I hear that's good.
That's the one that he sent yesterday. That's okay, the final one he sent after the golf with the cars.
I wanna play Multiverse.
John, you're impossible to freaking please. You're like, Brett, I was gonna invite you over. Here's before show stuff. Brett, I was gonna invite you over, but it seems like you got Game Buster stuff. Wouldn't you rather do something fun? I'm like, we're playing games. And he's like mad at me for that. It's like, no, okay, be mad at yourself.
We will continue this conversation in the social break, not during the political news portion of the show. Anyway, everyone, thank you for being here. For whatever it is that this is, we're glad to have you here. We've got so much news to talk about, as well as some fun stuff. And we're gonna mock some truly terrible people, and that'll be pleasurable. Anyway, along the way, if you would mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, assuming those are things that apply to the platform you're on, that would be great. And if you wanna send us any comments, tweets, super chats, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Brett, are you ready to talk about some historic news?
Intensely.
Okay, then in that case, let's transition into this. Apparently, I was wrong. Apparently, we'll see. Good things can happen. Kyrsten Sinema has indicated that she will now support the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, the $739 billion bill that the Democrats have put forward to change a lot about the climate, about healthcare, about taxes, a lot of different things. Unfortunately, to get her support, the sort of things that you probably expect considering it's Kyrsten Sinema had to happen. So they agreed to drop a $14 billion tax increase on some wealthy hedge fund managers and private equity executives that she opposes, change the structure of a 15% minimum tax on corporations, and include drought money to benefit Arizona. I would like to give her credit for including that last thing. It's like her acknowledging that, oh wait, we're supposed to pretend that this stuff is like for other people in our state. So I guess it's dry in Arizona, I hear. I don't know. I don't really spend much time there. I intern in wineries and, you know, hobnob with Wall Street execs, but I hear it's pretty hot and dry. So something, something drought. Anyway, the rest of it, $14 billion on the money that these hedge fund managers make that for some reason gets to be taxed at a way lower rate than the wages you'll earn waiting tables or building houses. That's gone. The minimum tax, there will be something, but you can guarantee that the changes are gonna benefit the wealthiest people in the country. Those are the things we need to give to get the other stuff that is admittedly not bad. Now, there are things in the bill already that we don't like, even in areas that we want legislation to be passed in, like in regards to the climate. And all of this, by the way, is in advance of this weekend where we expect there are gonna be test votes as well as the, what do they call it? The Amendmentorama or whatever.
The Votorama,
where everybody gets to put forward amendments. Most of them are gonna come from the Republicans and it's gonna try to kill it. It's gonna be cute, it's not gonna work. But you should be watching out for some that the Democrats will put forward, perhaps including Kyrsten Sinema, that will chip away at the good parts of this bill. But before we launch into our conversation, let's acknowledge some of the stuff in here that is good. Medicare will be allowed to start negotiating for prescription drug prices starting in 2023. There will be a $2,000 cap of the amount of money that senior patients under Medicare will have to spend out of pocket on prescription drugs. Right now, there's no cap. It could be $10,000, it could be $50,000. So that'll be capped at $2,000. All vaccines for seniors will now be free. There are tax credits for the purchase of electric vehicles, which are still too expensive. This will help. Both for new and importantly for used EVs, there will be tax credits, and there will be a fund of, I believe, $20 billion to retrofit factories to start producing cleaner hybrid and electric vehicles. All of that in addition to emissions reductions that are undercut in a bunch of different ways in the bill that are incredibly frustrating, but it is expected that it will help us get most of the way towards the emission reduction goals that the US has set for 2030. Not getting to 50% lower carbon emissions than I believe we had emitted in 2005, but I think like 41 to 43% below. So it gets us a portion of the way there. And I suppose for all of the issues that we've already acknowledged and more that we will probably add, it is more than we had last week, more than I expected we would get. Brett, what do you think about it?
I just love how progressive Kyrsten Sinema is in this negotiation, proving herself once again to be a champion as she ran as a progressive. She's a champion of the workaday Americans, fighting to reduce tax increases on hedge fund billionaires. I'm sure the good people of Arizona will be okay with that like drought money, but I'm glad that the thing she fought tooth and nail for was to protect hedge fund billionaires so that the way, I mean, and when you think about how, that's how they make their money. Like the thing that they do that's the equivalent of what you, any other way that any other person with a normal job makes their money. Like an agent makes a certain amount of money by negotiating a deal with people. Hedge fund managers who have their money in hedge funds, they get taxed, you know, the capital gains rate, the 20% or whatever on the money that they have in there. But yeah, they also get taxed at that lower percentage on their commissions from the profits of deals. That's the carried interest loophole. It is insane. They're taxed differently. Why? Because capitalism and America's like this giant, awesome old west casino to half of the people who live here. Even if they currently fancy themselves, you know, as the saying goes, like temporarily disadvantaged millionaires.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think that narrative is shakier than it was like 10 years ago, but not enough. Many Republicans are opposed to this bill. Overwhelmingly, the American public loves this bill. It's like plus 41 or something like that. And even a significant portion of Republicans support it, but they narrowly oppose it. In any event, it's like the bill is, it's gonna do a lot of good things. It's also gonna do bad things, and it could do more of the good things and less of the bad things. But unfortunately, some of the bad things are senators. And so this is, I guess, where we're stuck. So she insisted on, you know, getting rid of the provision that would have limited the preferential tax treatment of that income that Brett was alluding to. Now, for now, the Democrats are adding a new 1% excise tax that companies would have to pay on the amount of stock that they purchase. So basically the way that this scheme works is when corporations get a whole bunch of money, thanks to subsidies and profit gouging and or just success in business, they can do a lot of stuff with that money. They can invest, they can pay their workers more. These are all things that in theory they could do, but often don't. One of the things they do is buy up their own stock, which increases the price of the remaining stock because there's less of it. That's good for shareholders, and you bet your ass it's good for the executives and people on the board there. They make tons of money doing that. Doesn't really benefit most people, certainly doesn't benefit the workers. Now they will have to pay a 1% excise tax. Is that, that's not going to necessarily you know, disincentivize them doing it, but it'll raise a little bit of money. It's part of the way the Democrats say they're still going to reduce the deficit by $300 billion over X number of years. And so I guess that's something, although watch for that to be addressed in the Voterama. We'll see if it makes it through that. Anyway, by the way, she says, no, it's not that I don't want to get rid of the carried tax thing. It's just I don't want to do it in this case, okay? But don't worry, I'm acting in good faith. So let's do the reconciliation thing. And then she says she's going to work with Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, on separate legislation to address the preferential tax treatment for hedge fund income. And that would be passed separately, as in not under reconciliation, as in it would face an automatic filibuster and it would have negative 30% chance of actually succeeding. So get the hell out of here with your BS. It means less than nothing that she would address that in separate legislation.
Right. So on that last point that you made, the plan to carry to eliminate the carried interest loophole and various other things that she's against was like saying, all right, we have a paper route, we have a car right now, let's, you know, hit every house along the way. That's what everybody wants to do. We'll get the Medicare on in the first house, and then we'll toss a, you know, the eliminate the carried interest loophole because it's right next door. It's a very easy, like, let's do it all in one swoop thing. What she's arguing for is not only that she wants to do a completely different attempt at delivering this paper later, but she wants to do it like on stilts, like in a very impossible way. Like, yeah. I want to, but the way we have to do it if we do it later is I do a handstand and walk on my hands to that house and somehow throw it, or I don't do it. Like, she is giving herself the biggest obstacles to accomplishing that. And then for the 1%
that she would accidentally do that, that she would accidentally give herself these massive obstacles.
She's it's absolutely unfortunate doing it
that she doesn't see it.
Yeah, she knows exactly what she's doing, and she knows exactly where her bread is buttered. And like, we'd have an itemized list of conservative interests that are giving her money, and the uptick in that completely coincided with her decision to no longer be the quirky progressive, but rather be the quirky maverick, whatever that she's trying to be, where she's just kowtowing to the people who line her pockets. And that is pretty much the definition of corruption.
Yeah, 100%. And technically, the label that she prefers is centrist fiscal hawk. By the way, one more random fact. According to recent FEC filings, she brought in $1.6 million in Q4 of last year, I believe. Only 34,000 of it came from donations less than $200. Like, it's a rounding error. It's less than a rounding error. And it's not coming from the state. By the way, Joe Manchin, I think it was less than 1% of his funding came from West Virginia. It is ridiculous what we allow to happen in terms of campaign finance. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna get ready to move to graphic 6, but first, why don't we jump into this video?
This bill funds 87,000 new IRS agents. Imagine IRS agents descending upon America like a swarm of locusts. And by the way, these IRS agents aren't there to go after billionaires. They're there to go after you. They're there to go after your small business. They're there to go after your family. This is big government run amok. And if you don't want to be audited next year and the year after and the year after, and by the way, if you're a Republican donor, this corrupt administration will audit you next year and the year after and the year after, we ought to kill this terrible, terrible bill.
So you know that when Ted Cruz starts doing his like, I'm honestly impassioned voice, I have principles and I'm expressing them as a tough man, you know that you're being lied to. And the big lie there is that while the money that will be allocated to the IRS from the IRA will fund more auditors, they're not gonna be descending on people who make $20,000 a year. Here's an interesting question for him. What would be the utility of that? What would be gained by auditing people who make so little money? I guess it's simple, and the right loves to believe that you would do this just out of animus. That makes no sense whatsoever. And by the way, he gives away the game in that same clip. He does a 15 seconds of, oh, this is totally gonna hurt like regular people. That's who I'm here to defend. And by the way, if you're a wealthy Republican donor, they're gonna be auditing you. He's making sure that they know to be scared of this new this provision, the IRA. Those are the people who have money that they're hiding, taxes they should be paying. And he wants to pretend that in theory, this is now gonna result in lots of regular people being attacked by the IRS, which is now gonna be super powerful and flush with cash. Estimates say that the $80 billion wouldn't even get it to where it needs to be in terms of its obligations to conduct investigations and things like that. And as it stands right now, like, the poorest Americans get audited about the same rate as the top 1%. Those who have the most lawyers, the most capacity to hide large amounts of money that they should be paying in taxes are not audited often at all. That's why the IRS has been defunded over the course of several decades, mostly by the Republicans, but in many cases by the Democrats as well. It's because rich people do not want the IRS to be able to function because they're the ones who are committing the tax fraud. This isn't gonna solve all the problems with the IRS, but it will at least give them the funding and the staff to potentially catch some of the rampant financial crimes that are being committed by the wealthiest people in America.
This is, yeah, this, when you say give away the game, this is one of the most inadvertently honest things that Ted Cruz has ever said. He's like, when he says, with this money, the IRS isn't gonna come after billionaires, that's just Ted Cruz being confident that the way he's corruptly helped design America in this weird right-wing surge we've had is strong enough to withstand the IRS enforcing the laws. And that's all the IRS does. The IRS looks at what you did and says, did you cheat on your taxes? Now, his job as a senator is to change law and policy so that the tax code is actually fair. And if he wants to protect small businesses, which is something I'm 100% for, he can help do that. He can help do that tomorrow. And he can design the tax code. This faux populist prick can actually put his money where his stupid jawless mouth is. And he can go in there and design the tax code to go after the billionaires that these faux populists are pretending to target, when in reality, they're absolutely taking off their ridiculous masks after they go on Fox News to try to shore up some poor people votes. And then he crawls right into bed with the people who butter his bread on his backside.
Yeah, that's a nasty image you got there. Anyway, it's I don't see why. I don't know why people would accept this, except that they know that the IRS is supposed to be bad. They keep getting told it's bad. They don't realize that the people saying that are the rich people who don't like it. It doesn't actually hurt you. But
you're never going to win an argument saying the IRS is good, like politically.
No, it's not about what you good. It's about it's the people who it's bad for are the people who are the most powerful and wealthy in America, effectively.
And
it's working. If you search 87,000 IRS agents was trending earlier today. If we could go to just one tweet, Sly Jones, who oddly enough started his Twitter account in May of this year, was tweeting about it and getting tons of likes and retweets. Wake up, liberals, your party's lying to you again. No, you're being lied to. And by the way, you're a part of it. You're literally lying to other conservatives right now about what it would do. So again, these people will gobble up the narrative that the only things that might perhaps fight back against those who've been abusing the system the most are actually going to hurt people pulling in 18K a year. Absolutely, yes.
Because if you are a poor person, your taxes are very straightforward. And if you're an IRS agent, if you're the IRS without any money, you're like, let's just do the easy stuff because it costs too much to look into the people with complicated taxes. That's why before this bill, it was worse for the working class than it will be after.
100%. With that, we're going to go to our first break. When we come back, the right helping run cover for violent extremist groups. And then Dick Cheney, resistance member? We'll figure it out after this. That is not the official position of the TDR dragon, by the way. The dragon all up, down, and over the merch over at Shop TYT, but not just the dragon, not just TDR merch. We've also got, hey, the Twitchuation Room. What do you know? Take a look. Twitchuation Room on Wednesdays. Hey, Francesca. You can see her next Monday, actually, and all Mondays going forward. With that said, why don't we jump into some crazy news, starting with this. I think we can jump right into it.
Completely wrong. And the FBI needs to be purged of individuals that have this and think that these logos are examples of violent extremism, because they're not. As a matter of fact, most regular Americans all over America have these symbols and logos and do not think Ashley Babbitt is any way, shape, or form a person that inspires them to attack the United States government.
Marjorie Greene supports violent extremist groups. She wants them out there thriving. And so when the FBI, I guess, is looking into some of the symbols they use, which we'll discuss, that are ways that they can tell which groups might have a predisposition towards violence. It is her job to come out and immediately defend them, to run cover for these groups who are plotting acts of violence in America. And we don't even know if the thing that she's freaking out about with the FBI is even true. What we do know is that supposedly Project Veritas, so major grains of salt, has found this domestic terrorism symbols guide. It includes common images such as the Betsy Ross flag, the Gadsden flag, the Gonzalez battle flag, and the Liberty tree. The FBI, apparently in the bulletin, stresses that simply using the symbols or terms is not evidence of wrongdoing. So this is not something where they're locking up people because they have a flag out or anything like that. But it does talk about the symbols that some of these groups use and the martyrs that they worship, including Ashley Babbitt. Now again, we don't know that this is even legit, although there's some reason to believe so. But even if it is legit, again, they're not locking people up for using these symbols. And we know that these groups often do use these symbols to organize around, to advertise in. And despite what she would have you believe, no, most Americans don't have the Gonzalez battle flag outside of their house. Most people don't have images of the Liberty tree on the back of their Accord. That is not actually the case. But it gets even more ridiculous when you move past the battle flags and stuff like that to some of the other symbols that she wants to defend. Take a look at this.
Now, here's one that I find extremely shocking. The Punisher skull. You remember the Punisher logo? If you remember Chris Kyle, the great American sniper that we consider to be a hero, who had a record number of kills over in Iraq and during this time he was able to kill terrorists, the kind of terrorists that Joe Biden took credit for just the other night, by the way. Terrorists that were killing American soldiers, terrorists that were intent on attacking the United States. Thank God for Chris Kyle. He's a patriot, he's a great American. But they consider the Punisher skull, which the Punisher logo was represented his entire group. They had it on their Humvee. They had it on much of their clothing, their bags. But now the Punisher skull is considered to be militia violent extremism.
She doesn't even know what order those words are supposed to go in or what words even mean. She's hardly able to express herself, but she does know that she likes him for one reason. He killed a lot. And that's really all that it takes. She knows that he killed a lot of people. Also, she didn't want to give Biden credit for killing a terrorist literally earlier this week. But you just said that that's the best thing you can do. And this wasn't just a run of the mill terrorist. Ayman al-Zawahiri was the leader. He was organized. So it's weird that she doesn't want to give him credit. Anyway, the Punisher logo definitely is used by people whose interest is not upholding the constitutional order and those sorts of things. Regardless of whether one sniper you like might have used it, who's using it these days? And what does it represent? I'll remind you, in case you're not big into comics, Frank the Punisher Castle first appeared back in 1974. And since then, he's been busy amassing one of the highest body counts in the Marvel Universe. He's killed over 48,500 people as of a decade ago. Now, he often uses torture, kidnapping, and coercion because he's fighting against crime and police corruption. Of course, as with everything, once you put a symbol out there, it will be co-opted and perverted. Now, something that it was meant to imply that we will use any means to stop police corruption has been co-opted by cops as a show of undying loyalty to other cops, no matter what those cops do, no matter which laws they break, no matter how many people they brutalize or kill. It is cops saying cops can do whatever they want. That's what it's for. She knows that. However, she likes that. And so again, the cover continues to be run, Brett. She knows these symbols are not always used by violent people, but they are often used by violent people. And she wants to delude people about that.
Lists like this do smell a little bit of like rap music and video games are bad. Like there is an overlap with the logic of that, right? But this does, no one's going out there. The fact that Project Veritas had to like quote theoretically go deep in their investigative journalism to find out that there's a guidebook of iconography and not exclusive affiliation, but a frequent crossover. Something that everybody freaking knows anyway. Like she then, you know, I get it. Like there is, it's not exactly the cool. No one's like, oh, if you have this flag, you're absolutely terrible. Sometimes you're just kind of douchey and you're like, come and take it. But I will say that this same woman is saying that, like, even though there's a list out there that says some people with this flag are affiliated with right wing extremist terrorist inclinations, like, she's saying that all teachers are groomers, right? All trans people are trying to molest your kids. That is a much more ridiculous jump in logic than what a book inside the FBI about things that frequently bear out to be true mean.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, they're not locking people up using symbols.
It's just indicators of whether it walks like a duck. Like, if you're putting together an argument, does it walk like a terrorist? Well, and we all freaking know this. I just don't get it. I'm very frustrated, especially what you said about, like, most regular Americans have this. No. And here is, like, the central theme we need to lean into, especially after the vote in Kansas for abortion rights in Kansas. Yeah. We need to understand that what people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and others try to convince you is normal America stuff is provably further and further away from what most normal Americans want. This rightward swing of the American political policymaking system that people like Ted Cruz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert endorse is unpopular. It's just popular enough for them to cobble together these crazies to shore up the unpopularity of their very provably elitist tax and capital approach to legislation in this country.
I want to get your reaction to one more bit of video that I think you're probably going to enjoy. Let's jump into this final video of the B block.
Violent extremist militia. Well, I will self-report right now that every day in the Senate, I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the back of them.
What are you doing, Ted? This dude wants to be a tough guy so bad. He has an image that, like, I think tough guys wear boots. So I don't know, I'm gonna slam a boot down. Because to him, this Gonzales flag is an important symbol. You can take a look at it here. It's apparently designed to be a stark gauntlet thrown at the feet of Mexican federal power. From, like, so many decades ago. No, it's symbolic of, for most people, probably being against Mexico, I would imagine. For him, I don't know. I don't think that it means literally anything to him. Now, many people have pointed out that it is weird to take your boot off at a congressional hearing. Many people have said it doesn't even seem like that's what happened. It seems like he already had it off, like he was waiting to show it, or that he wasn't even previously wearing it, that he brought an extra boot to put up. And those are all good points, so we should dive into that. But I'd also like to point out that that's an ugly boot. Why would that be the boot that you wear? That weird monochromatic flag emblazoned across the back of it? Is that a thing that you even do with boots, Brett? Like, he's got a flag that he supposedly worships. It's supposed to be the American flag. Weird that he would, like put something else on a boot like that.
He basically says, when I put on a costume to pretend I'm someone I'm not, I put on this costume. One that makes it seem like I'm all for daring Mexicans to take this cannon. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. And I get this weird porny flex that a lot of right wingers have because they have no control over anything else in their life. And their fantasy is to shoot government when at the same time they're telling us that we can't question criminal justice issues because that's us. But I have to remind them that's us questioning the government in the exact same way they tell us we should. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. But, like, what happened on the floor of the Senate, which he is now walking around on with, like, probably very gross smelling socks, is that this guy tried to convince us he's a cowboy. This Harvard Princeton marshmallow tried to get with, like, now with a beard, he's like a marshmallow you dropped in, like, beard trimmings. He's trying to convince us that he, like, rides horses. And everybody who's heard him say thing one knows that this dude is a phony.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. He's lassoing steers on the weekend. That's what he's doing. No, you're totally right. Look, all of this is just drawn from him doing the little phone call, raising money for Trump, his wife getting insulted by Trump. He is a marshmallow. He's the stay cupped right. marshmallow man is what he is. And he wants you to believe that he's, I don't know, the Sundance Kid. Like, no,
this Caribbean dude by way of Canada is totally a Texan.
100%. Okay, let's go to one little, I did not expect to be talking about this person again ever, honestly, let alone this week. But that said, let's jump into this video.
In our nation's 246-year history, there has never been an individual who is a greater threat to our republic than Donald Trump. He tried to steal the last election using lies and violence to keep himself in power after the voters had rejected him. He is a coward. A real man wouldn't lie to his supporters. He lost his election and he lost big. I know it, he knows it, and deep down, I think most Republicans know it. Lynn and I are so proud of Liz for standing up for the truth, doing what's right, honoring her oath to the Constitution when so many in our party are too scared to do so. Liz is fearless. She never backs down from a fight. There is nothing more important she will ever do than lead the effort to make sure Donald Trump is never again near the Oval Office. And she will succeed. I am Dick Cheney. I proudly voted for my daughter. I hope you will too.
I'm Liz Cheney and I approve this message.
So Liz Cheney's in a tough spot because she has turned against Donald Trump. She's willing to criticize him, vote for his impeachment. And so she's bringing out Dick Cheney to help her out. And maybe it'll work. Maybe Dick Cheney still has an aura of respectability or, you know, respect for his previous achievements as a Republican, that will help her. I don't know. It's been a long time since Dick Cheney's been trotted out. It's sort of crazy that he's still alive if you really think about it. Like if I told you that he died 7 years ago, you'd probably believe it. It's also kind of an indictment of the idea that there is some sort of supreme being in the world. Think about all of the people who've died in the last 10 years and he's survived. It's weird how the world works. But anyway, look, he supports his daughter and the claims that he made there about Donald Trump, I think are almost all true. Still, he's one of the worst people ever. We know that he knows that he and George W. Bush did terrible, terrible things. So while he is right to point out that Donald Trump is a bad person who has hurt many people, he also knows what administration he was a part of. And so I guess at this point, we're supposed to accept him as an ally, or maybe it'll help keep someone critical of Trump in office, Brett. But it feels weird to even partially agree with him, even on something fairly obvious, considering all that he's done throughout our lives.
Misery acquaints a man with strange bedfellows. That's what I was saying. We're in a really weird time. And the right wing is going to try to convince us all that in this time and place that we are now affiliated with Dick Cheney and he is a war hawk and now all of the left is war hawks, right? But that's absolutely provably not the case. What is happening is there's a lot of people who are like, listen, this is people like Dick Cheney, I'm already in the lead. And the only thing that can threaten my lead is if Trump gets in charge and dissolves America and turns it into a place where he will do the same kinds of things I, as Dick Cheney, do, but under a completely different system that only benefits him and kills a lot of people in America. That's it, because that's the roadmap that America already rejected once in the Donald Trump versus Joe Biden showdown, period.
100%. Finally, the only other point I want to make is that she is, Liz Cheney is trailing. I think she's down, she was down 22 points back in July. There have been some Republicans who've been able to weather these challenges after voting to impeach Donald Trump, but it's not looking at this point like she's going to be one. And bear in mind, Harriet Hageman, the top primary challenger against her, looks like she's going to win, believes the election was rigged against Trump. Says, I think this question is so interesting because the press just absolutely cannot get over this. The election was rigged. Yes, yes. A year and a half plus after the election, it's the media that can't get over things. It's them who are obsessing about 2020 and telling lies about it. Anyway, that person looks like has a good chance of entering Congress soon. So add one more person to those who are willing to do literally anything to get Donald Trump in power and keep him there.
And two quick points. One, all right, yeah, I guess then one, I love that video of Dick Cheney because A, he looks like he's barely clinging onto life and I don't like him that much. But B, he's like, all right, so I like my daughter, it's pretty great. Anyways, while I have you, can I interest you in a reverse mortgage?
Definitely.
So good.
I know a lot of people are saying like he looks really bad there, but I don't know. I feel like he looked very much like that back in 2001. Like, I feel like he's kind of like Paul Rudd, but Paul Rudd froze in his like early 30s and Dick Cheney froze in his early 70s. And he's just lingering there. I guess that's what advanced robotics will do for you. Mm-hmm. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna go to our second break. When we come back, we got a little bit of fun. Fox News tries to spread a narrative of why the Dems should be really afraid in Pennsylvania. And I ran the numbers and I'm not buying it, but we'll talk about that after this. Okay, look at us starting our final block of the first hour at 10:44. Not bad.
I'm sorry. Okay. John yelled at me a couple weeks ago and said, Brett, you're a big old windbag, you stupid windbag. And now I am doing him the favor of losing my train of thought every few minutes. So
I did not call you a stupid windbag. I called you an effing windbag.
There you go.
Get it right.
And everybody knows I can F.
We're never going to be syndicated. Anyway, with that said,
I think that's why we're not syndicated.
I know there's probably lots of reasons. Anyway, with that said, why do they always talk about Marvel in the middle of stories about inflation? Anyway, with that said, let's jump into this story. A Michigan town has voted to remove funding for its library over the fact that they had an LGBTQ novel in it. Again, the one novel was enough to get them to strip funding away from a library. So it came about because a graphic novel, Gender Queer, a Memoir, was in the adult section, by the way, but that wasn't good enough. So they had this meeting where a bunch of aggrieved parents who totally knew that the book was there and had personal reasons to be opposed to it. They didn't just read about it on Facebook or see a video from libs of TikTok that got them to go there. They showed up and complained. So the library decided, okay, there's nothing wrong with this book, but what we're gonna do is we're gonna place it behind the counter so kids can't accidentally see something accepting and tolerant. That wasn't enough. They still stripped away the funding for the library because there was a perfectly normal book behind a counter so kids couldn't read it. Here is Gender Queer, a Memoir, by the way. Obviously, it's the spawn of Beelzebub. Anyway, the vote was 62-37%. It wasn't even that close. And I want you to take a look at some of what the people opposing the funding for the school said. Let's see, pray that we can make changes and make the Patmos Library a safe and neutral place for our children. They warned that the library's director was promoting the LGBTQ ideology. What that is, nobody knows, literally nobody. Bridge Michigan reported that some of the residents placed lawn signs with similar remarks, including one that said 50% increase to groom our kids, vote no on library. And I love that wording because it's not like vote no on this particular tax bill, vote no on library, vote no on book.
May no like words.
Too many book in place, not like it.
Me anyway, no read book, me resigned. Judge book by cover. But exactly. Me
they
angry.
Did. They did. So no funding. Library director resigned in spring, citing harassment and claims that she was indoctrinating children. So again, we have been warned by the right that there is a scourge of intolerance and cancel culture and all of that. We aren't tolerant enough. That's why people like Dave Rubin would write books like "Don't Burn This Book." And now they're going around finding individual books that they have such a problem with that they are driving people out of their careers and potentially shutting down entire public libraries because one book that was behind a counter and not even accessible to children was unacceptable to them because something, something grooming. But we're the side that has a problem with tolerance. At least that's what I've heard from Bill Maher and other supposed moderates, that the left has gotten too censorious. I don't remember the last time the left shut down a library or drove a librarian out of business because they were getting so much harassment over them supposedly being pedophiles. But Brett, what do you think?
Like, there's so, like, the Bible's trans. The Bible's like, well, I've got man parts in Adam. I'm going to use the man parts and make them a woman, Eve. So that's trans. The other thing is, like, they just have no idea what would make a library neutral. A neutral library has books that represent all ideas. And then it's up to you to go find the books, read them. These are not, they're not opening the book and having story time. In fact, quite the contrary, they put it in a place that's not for kids, which I would argue is just put them by subject. That's a neutral library. Already, yeah, you've deneutralized the library. Every argument they make is for censorship. And the right wing is the party of cancel culture. They're canceling you for having freedom to make choices over your own body. They're canceling you for that. They're canceling their own politicians like Liz Cheney for having opinions like maybe we should follow the evidence to see whether a election was stolen. They cancel anyone who says stuff like that. And in this, they're canceling the concept of the library and redefining it as what is essentially a place with only approved propaganda to make you a right winger. And the loudest voices of this, the people pushing the hardest, are people like Charlie Kirk from Turning Point USA or Toilet Paper USA, something that is designed to groom kids into being right-wing weirdos. Period. That's the whole plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And along the way, get them to turn away from any and all other education. His most recent book is literally trying to convince people not to go to college. Of course, he will support right-wing politicians that went to Princeton and Yale and Harvard and all of that. They're great people. They're wealthy people. We should look up to them. But you shouldn't get an education. And you certainly shouldn't be funded by the government in any way, subsidized to get an education.
And they're advocating for for-profit schools. They're advocating for you not to go to public schools. And if you are on the right wing and you need that dose of deep state skepticism, there it is, dudes. They are trying to profit off the money that you pay into the education system and give it to their rich friends to indoctrinate people into a pre-approved list of things that will not give them religious freedom or personal freedoms that are protected by if you read the actual Bill of Rights. Sorry, I got worked up, Johnny.
I just love that, like Dave Rubin. I know, I don't like to focus on Dave Rubin because he's the absolute worst. But he literally wrote a book about the left burning books, and he's been oddly quiet. As so, like, literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books are being banned in libraries around the country. Libraries are being shut down. Weird that this guy who cared so much about this topic that he would have someone ghostwrite him a book about it suddenly is quiet about it this entire time. Weird that. Anyway, with that said, we do have to get to our last topic of the hour. We're going to launch directly into this.
More than 8,300 Democrats in the western part of the state are ditching the Democratic Party and registering to become Republicans this year. In total, nearly 40,000 statewide Democrats have switched to the GOP in 2022, compared to just over 12,000 going the other way.
Oh my God, that is actually really bad news for the Democrats. I mean, 40,000 and only 12,000 going to the right. I can understand why Fox News would focus so much on this, because the numbers are clear and the numbers tell a story. In this case, the numbers tell the story that they want you to believe. They want you to hear the number 39,000 and then discount that 12,000 who switched from the Republicans to the Democrats and believe that this is a terrible catastrophe for the Democrats. And look, anyone switching out of your party isn't great. But there are some added questions I would have upon being presented by those numbers. And in fact, I did have those. And so I looked at the numbers, which they mentioned in that clip, and then also in an article in the New York Post, which is helping to advance this narrative, 39,000 Democrats switched their registration in 2022. So they asked no further questions about that, except maybe to ask individuals and diners why they flipped and how bad the Democrats are and everything. And I get it, the Democrats are really bad. I understand why people would leave the party. But how significant is it? Well, I decided to look at the 2020 Pennsylvania specific vote, and Joe Biden got 3,458,229 votes. Along the way, by the way, and I can't stress this enough, he won the state flipping it from when Donald Trump won it back in 2016. I know that's inconvenient for them to acknowledge, but Donald Trump lost in Pennsylvania. Do you know what 39,000 Democrats out of not the total voting population in Pennsylvania, but just the votes that Biden got is? It's 0.0078% of his support has flipped. Could it be important? Sure, in a super close election, maybe that would matter, but it would have to be pretty damn close. That is razor close for that to matter. And I tried to find out the answer to one more question. You know that like people switch parties every year, right? I mean, we would expect that things happen. There's news. Parties take certain positions. They try to do certain things and then they don't. They fail. They succeed. All of this results in people changing their positions. Would you not be willing to bet that 0.0078% of every party switches every year? It's less than a rounding error. And yet, if you don't ask any of those questions, if you just take the number at face value, then well, it looks like there's a big problem in Pennsylvania, Brett.
I mean, for me, when I look at this, I go, well, anytime you have a switch of someone, if they vote the other way, the flip is actually twice that, because one side loses and the other gains. It's like if I pay $500 less in rent, you're gonna be, yes, I'm gonna be paying than you. You're paying $1,000 more than me.
Yeah, right. To be fair, then, assuming all of these people do vote, it's 0.015% if you double the effect. Yes.
And yes, this is just in Western Pennsylvania. This is the kind of freakish cherry picking that they're going to do on Fox under the guise of doing something different than what the liberal media wants you to do. All this proves to me is that when you look at Pennsylvania, you look at the difference between certain polls and other polls, and the one that speaks volumes to me, if I'm a Democratic operative, the thing they should be shutting the hell up and listening to is individual political talent. And you have a huge political talent in Pennsylvania, in John Fetterman running against Dr. Oz. And the Democratic Party, if they give a crap about winning, which I'm not convinced they do, need to lean into finding more people like that. Lean into the fighters who remind people of the old Democratic Party that they used to be a part of. One that fought for working class people every single day and did it make this weird, baffling, but explainable by campaign finance issues, neoliberal turn.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So they did end up talking to some people. Beth Ann Rosica says she switched. I think the economy is huge. And I also think a lot of the school issues for parents across the state in Pennsylvania, it's just been horrific watching what's happened to our kids academically, socially, emotionally. I think you can probably fill in the blanks for the sorts of topics she's talking about there. All these failed policies have just really resulted in academic losses. So look, here's the thing. The number that have switched is largely irrelevant. So you might think, well, by focusing on this, you're being so defensive about the Democrats. No, I'm not surprised that some people are flipping. I'm actually shocked that it's not larger. I could have run those numbers and found that it was 5% of the vote. And I would say the reason they'd be switching is worth investigating, and not just by talking to two people in a diner who are Republicans. Maybe looking at what promises were made by the party and to what extent did they make good on those promises. But the thing is, again, they will never interrogate this question in that way because they don't want to reiterate what got people to vote for the Democrats in the first place. The things that they have largely failed to do, we'll see with the IRA, but they've largely failed to do it. Focusing on that, that paints a very different picture of what gets you elected as a president than just saying something, something inflation. Anyway. That is unfortunately all the time we have for our first hour of the show. Thank you to all of you on the linear platforms and on the podcast for watching. If you haven't already, in terms of podcasts, please go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review us. If you are watching on Twitch, YouTube, or one of the other platforms, we've got a lot more to talk about, including the throwing away of the garbage people of the week. So don't go anywhere. Brett Ehrlich and I will be back in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.